Fear is only used temporarily, and has to be used correctly. Fear is just an opening, but some people cling to it. For many people, it is easier to understand than the message. They really have no reason to fear, but they want to cling to that emotion. Many people require much fear to stop their world, but that is their own choice. D. It seems that the beings use emotions in ways that we wouldn't understand. E. We have used emotions to ways that we do not understand. D. Then there is really nothing to be afraid of? E. No. It is a gentle cracking of the shell. There is no harm intended. The strange portion of this experience regarding the truck full of people has also been repeated in some of my other cases. The experience was apparently meant just for Eddie, because the other people were oblivious of the huge ship overhead, and also oblivious of Eddie. This was most unusual. I live in the country, and if you see someone parked at the side of the rural road, you always stop to see if they need help. This is only common courtesy, because houses are far between in the country, and help may be hard to find. You would never pass a stranded neighbor. It appeared he was invisible to them, caught up in his own little time warp where no one else was affected. A truly private experience. After awakening, Eddie remembered some strange incidents involving animals. Once, while helping his father in the hayfield, he was driving the tractor when a dove flew down and landed on his right forearm. He felt that something happened at that time, because it was so startling. Another time he was sitting in a cornfield when a coyote came up and began walking around him in circles. This was highly unusual because coyotes will mostly, 40, the custodians, avoid humans. In another incident while he was hunting in the woods, a deer allowed him to walk up and touch it. It had no fear element whatsoever. At these times he felt as though something happened to slow him down. It made him look at things differently. There are many stories in UFO cases where people report animals behaving in unusual ways. Whitley Strieber calls some of these cases screen memories, when the person sees an illusion of an animal to cover what is really there. I think these display that the contact does not have to be physical or dramatic. It does not have to be actual contact with an alien creature. It appears that it can happen when you least expect it, in ways that are very subtle. It leaves a vivid impression on the conscious mind, but something more profound is occurring on the subconscious level while the mind is distracted and not monitoring the input. I, myself, had an unusual incident with an owl that I have never forgotten, mostly because of the oddity of the event. I cannot remember the date, but I know it was winter, and I think it was before I became fully involved with UFO material, because I did not place any importance on it until the subject of screen memories came up later. This would place it about 1988 or so. I was driving home very late at night, well after midnight, from one of my metaphysical group meetings in another city. I live in a very isolated situation atop a forest-covered mountain in the Ozark Mountains. The isolation does not bother me, because of my constant traveling and lecturing I spend much time in the major busy cities of the world. After so much hectic activity I enjoy and appreciate my solitude when I return home. There are only about 5 houses in the 4 miles it takes me to climb my mountain. My house sits a mile from the nearest neighbor, so the road is very dark, and I am used to seeing wild animals in the area at night. I had driven to the top of the mountain and just passed my last neighbor's gate. As I neared my place, at the boundary where my land begins, my headlights picked up a huge owl standing in the middle of the road. I drove right up to it and it wouldn't, condensed or distorted time, 41, move. It just kept standing there, apparently mesmerized by my headlights. Its head was even with the top of the fender, so I could see it and its huge unblinking eyes quite clearly. I honked and came closer to it. I didn't want to hurt it, just to make it move out of the road. It then turned and flew very low to the ground with a large wingspan, and alighted just out of the range of my headlights. Once again I approached it and it wouldn't move until I got right up to it. Then it would fly a short distance again, alight and turn to face the car. This continued all the way to my gate. It would stop at various places in front of my car, and just stare unblinking at me. Each time it took several seconds to make it move. I laughed because it seemed very peculiar. I was not afraid of it. I kept talking to it, asking it to please move because I didn't want to run over it. I could have several times, because it would not budge until I came right up to it, and honked. This slowed me down considerably as it stopped and then flew low to the ground a short distance and landed again. Finally, the last time it flew to the other side of the entrance to my driveway and just stood there while I turned in. I told my son-in-law about its strange behavior, and he thought it was unusual because owls don't behave like that. He traps and hunts and is familiar with the behavior of the animals in our woods. He also said it sounded like a very large owl. Later, when the subject of screen memories, especially those dealing with owls, came up, I thought it was amusing. I didn't think it could have been one of these because I didn't feel any fear, only amusement. Also, I definitely knew there was no missing time, because I checked the clocks when I came in and stayed up for a while afterwards. It was years later, in October 1996, when the event came rushing back to me with a tinge of apprehension. I had just completed a lecturing tour throughout Scotland and Northern England. I had a few days in London with the luxury of not having any engagements, before continuing on to Dorset in the south of England to speak at a conference. My idea of relaxation is probably not what the average person wants to do. But I took advantage of the time off to go to the Natural History Museum in 42, The Custodians, London. Museums and libraries are my favorite places. I wandered for hours from the main hall, where the giant reconstruction of a dinosaur stands, to the side rooms where every species of animal is preserved in cases. It was in the bird room where I was taken off guard. In one case, all the species of owls were displayed. What shocked me and sent chills down my spine was that none of them were as large as the one I saw on the deserted road years before. None of these could have been seen over the fender of my car. As I stared at them in wonder and perplexity, questions flooded into my mind. What did I really see that night in the road? Did I have a similar experience to the ones I was investigating? Did something else happen that night? I never thought so at the time, and just considered it a curiosity. But now I know that if something else did occur, it was a gentle and easy preparation for the work I was to do, and was definitely not to be feared. I am not saying this was an example of contact with alien beings. I am just saying that it bears an uncanny resemblance to the cases I have since investigated. If nothing else, it raises questions in my mind. Elsewhere in this book, they say it can happen in the blink of an eye once they have your attention. It's strange how many things may be occurring to us without our conscious knowledge. Investigated another case that occurred in the city of Little Rock, as a woman was going to work on a busy highway during rush hour traffic. She saw a huge capsule-shaped craft suddenly appear directly in front of her in the sky. She thought it would cause most of the traffic to come to a screeching halt. Instead, everything was proceeding normally. There were joggers running by on the sidewalk, and she frantically waved and shouted at them from her car. She tried to get their attention, and kept pointing upward. They continued jogging as though she was invisible. She pulled her car over to the curb, and watched the craft do several drastic gyrations, and fly away. No one else paid, I, condensed or distorted time, 43, any attention to it, although it was huge. She was not abducted, and nothing else happened during the event. I investigated a case in 1997 half a world away in England that was identical in all respects. Do these aliens have the ability to create an individual experience that no one else is allowed to witness? A similar case will be explored in more detail later in this book. Apparently, there is a great deal happening to us on other levels. It only becomes uncomfortable to us when something happens to bring it to the attention of the conscious mind. I feel that since we are mostly unaware of it, and we couldn't do anything about it anyway, that we shouldn't worry about it. It would be too easy to become paranoid. Hopefully there is a plan to it all that we may discover someday, a method to the madness, so to speak. These incidents, however, seem to be a different type of experience from Janet's. Eddie's world still had movement in it. Janet's did not. The world around her had stopped, while her private world continued. It was almost as though she was moving faster than the dimension she normally lived in. Everything in that world appeared to stop, because it was moving at a slower vibration. Almost as though she was slipping and sliding through dimensions. The following case is another example. When Valerie first told me about her UFO experience, I was not especially interested, because I was not working heavily in that area yet. It seemed like an ordinary sighting, until she started recounting some unusual circumstances. By the winter of 1988, when this session took place, I had become more involved in investigations. I decided to ask more about the case so I could have a record of it. I now can see that it relates to the two cases of distorted time I have already reported. 30-something Val was a female barber in a small nearby town. I went to her house on her day off and asked her to repeat her experience for the tape recorder. It occurred around 1975 while she was living on the outskirts of Fort Smith, Arkansas, a moderate-sized city on the central western side of the state. Some friends had been visiting her, and by 2 o'clock in the morning, 44, the custodians, most of them had gone home. There was one girl left that Val had to drive back to her apartment in the city. She drove down some side streets and was heading for the highway when she first saw the strange object. It was a large luminous, white, glowing thing that was larger than the moon. Val pulled over to the side of the street so they could watch it. They weren't too far from an army base, and thought it might have something to do with military night maneuvers. It had an umbrella-type shape, so she thought it might be a parachute, but it was soon evident it wasn't anything as normal as that. As they watched, it suddenly shot right at them and hovered over the car. Frightened, Val put the car into reverse, turned around and headed toward the city. As she reached the highway, the white glowing object moved and based them on the passenger side of the car. It did not maintain any particular shape. It seemed to change, but remained a very white, luminous, glowing light. She drove faster, determined to reach the city as quickly as possible. Then she noticed a strange phenomenon. There was no traffic in either lane, and no lights. This sounded surprisingly similar to Janet's experience. The unusual situation continued when she turned off the highway and entered the city. She then saw that the street lights were going out one by one as she approached them, and yet she could see to drive. Nothing was moving, neither the grass nor the trees. There was only an eerie silence. They saw no dogs, no cats, no other cars, no people, no lights in any of the houses. It was as if they were the only people in the world, a weird twilight zone feeling. She described it as being in a vacuum, no sound, no movement, nothing. The street lights were off in the area they passed through, yet there was a soft radiating light coming from somewhere above them. They were determined to get someplace where there were other people. They went by a large shopping mall where there was an all-night restaurant. The object then hovered over the mall. As they drove by the restaurant, they noticed there was no sign of life, although it was open 24 hours a day. There were no lights and no people anywhere. As they drove on, they did not meet any cars or see any people. Even condensed or distorted time, 45, though it was late, normally there was always someone on the streets in the city. Out of desperation, they decided to go to a friend's office downtown. He often worked late at night, and they knew he would be there. When they entered the office, their world returned to normal. They didn't tell him the real reason they had stopped by, and they just visited for a while. Val then took her friend to her apartment. As she headed toward the highway to return home, the object appeared again, almost as though it had been waiting for her. Everything was normal during the time they were in the office, and when she drove to the apartment. But now the light was back again, basing her on the driver's side of the car. When she hurriedly arrived home and drove into her driveway, the object swiftly sped away and disappeared in the night sky. Val said the way it moved in so fast in the beginning, and the way it sped away, it definitely appeared to be controlled. After the discussion, we decided to try a hypnosis session to find more details about the incident. She immediately began to recall minor things in detail: the girl's name, which she could not remember consciously, the exact time they left the house, the make and year of her car, and the fact that she was aggravated about having to drive the girl home so late at night. She noticeably breathed faster and was excited as she recounted the initial sighting of the object and the frantic drive toward the city. She said to her friend, "This is stupid, driving fast this way. If it wants us, it can have us." She was trying to get to town where there would be other people, so she could have witnesses. Her description of events was very close to her conscious memories. "V, we know if we can get into Fort Smith there'll be somebody. There's always a patrol car near the mall. There's always people eating at Sambo's. We've got to go by there anyway. It's real strange. Nothing is moving. There are no cars. There are no animals. There's nothing. It's eerie. It feels like we're in a time warp, like a twilight zone. But the streetlights. It seems like there's streetlights." 46. "The custodians ahead of us, but there's no streetlights when we're there. It's like something is happening to the power. We get to the mall area, and it's right above the buildings. I want to think it's the moon, but a strange moon. It can't be, because it changes shapes." D. "What shapes did it change to?" V. "I can't tell you exactly. It wasn't round to look at like a moon. It was more oblong, but it had no sharp lines. It was glowing and white. And in Sambo's, there's no one in there." D. "Can you hear the motor on your car?" V. "No. We can't hear anything. I think our hearts are pounding so fast." Laugh, she said upon awakening that she could really feel her heart beating faster, as though she was experiencing it again, with all the physical symptoms. V. "Everything but us seems to be in a time warp. The car is working. We can hear each other. The car is being a car. But there's no other sound. It's very still. It's just very strange." They did not see one car or one sign of life the entire way. When they decided to go to her friend's office, and turned into the street leading there, everything returned to normal. There were lights as there should have been. In the office they were tempted to tell her friend this crazy story, but it seemed too absurd, since everything was normal there. After she dropped the girl off at her apartment and turned toward the highway going to her house, the object returned and the Twilight Zone atmosphere came back. Again, no noises, no cars, no lights and no people, although everything had been normal at the office. V, "I have to drive on home. So, I do. And I still have this light traveling with me. It doesn't seem to be bad, but it's condensed or distorted time." 47. Frightening. "It's a strange thing that's happening. I made Glinda promise not to tell anybody. I didn't want them to think I was crazy. I didn't want to be locked away. I made her promise she wouldn't tell anybody. I went home, and when I turned into my driveway, I was looking at the light. And it just went whoosh away from me, as fast as it had come the first time. And out of sight." The majority of her memories under hypnosis were the same as her conscious ones. "I knew the only way I would get further information was to ask to speak to her subconscious. I then asked it what occurred during the time she was driving and had the strange sensation of no lights or motion." V. "The examination. It was an observation of this entity. She was being observed through all of her journey. The trip indeed happened. But the ship was observing and picking up energy patterns and tests, while she was driving her car." D. "How is that accomplished?" V. "Oh, it's not difficult." D. "Was she taken physically?" V. "No. The equipment is technically very advanced, and far-reaching. In fact, this happens often, that tests or an observation is made without the physical vehicle being removed." D. "What is the purpose of such examinations?" V. "It's just informative. It's not bad." D. "Why did she feel she was in a time warp?" V. "She was in a time warp." D. "Can you be more specific?" V. "The energy and the power that were part of the transference of the pattern, was affecting her perception of the pattern, affecting her perception of her surroundings, as if time had stopped." D. "But yet she felt she was really driving." V. "And she was." D. "And she thought she was conscious of her surroundings." 48. "The custodians." V. "Yes. But you know now that more things happen on more than one level, Dolores. and that many things can happen simultaneously. You know that. D. I'm becoming more and more aware of that. V. And this is just another example of a simultaneous happening. D. I'm curious about the fact that there were no lights, and no cars or anything. Do you mean that time literally stopped outside of her immediate environment? V. Yes, but it did not hamper the rest of the world. The power that preceded these events simply stopgapped the happenings in the direct path. Do you understand? D. I'm trying to. As though everything was frozen? V. Yes. But it was so momentary that it affected nothing. D. Then other people's lives were not affected at all? V. Right. D. But were there really no lights? V. Yes, there were really no lights for an instant. D. And this was caused by the energy? V. Yes, that is correct. D. Would others have noticed that there weren't any lights? V. No. This pattern, this observation was happening with this one alone. And her friend. D. So if someone was outside looking at it, for them life would have gone on as normal? V. The time element was that there was no one on the outside looking in. D. You mean there wasn't anyone there? V. There was nothing. It was such an instant, such a flash, such a moment, that it was as if it wasn't. D. So in that moment there was no one else involved in this scenario. V. That is right. D. So time was condensed? Yes, so actually less time passed than she thought. Yes, so instead of a time lapse, it was a time condensation. Condensed or distorted time, 49, V, yes. For her it seemed as if it went on for a very long time, but however, it didn't. D, and in that instance what was transmitted? V, an observation of soul memory patterns. Light emitted. Conditions of concepts. Thought processes. Conditioning. What the human conditioning is, in terms of their ability to receive and to transmit, and the conflict of the patterns set in the conscious mind through conditioning and training, and the reality of who these beings are. Do you understand? D. Was there an exchange of information both ways? V. There was an exchange into the understanding that one of the things she has been clear on is that, even though it was very frightening, it was a tremendous blessing. It was a gift, so to say. It was an acknowledgement of more than the concepts of society had allowed, and an acknowledgement of a greater life, and more than is. D. Was there also an interplay between the friend? I mean, was it occurring to both people? V. It is difficult to say what the nudging did for this other one. I can speak more directly for this one. Obviously, the observation had not only to do with the vehicle, but for the one with her too. It would seem only reasonable. Otherwise, she would have been alone. So it was an analogy, and a gathering of information. D. But was there also an interchange? In other words, were the beings also emitting information? V. Yes, on a deeper level. Not on a conscious level. D. But there was no harm. V. Oh, no. Oh, no. It is not harmful. D. This is what some people believe. That it is harmful. V. Yes, but those people are lost in a dream state. They are in the clutter, in the muddle, in many ways. D. Well, can you tell me about the ship, or the beings that were collecting this information? V. No. I could tell you that they were good. And that light, 50, the custodians, that was glowing was representative of that light that was glowing. D. And information was transmitted to her for use in her life? V. Yes. There came an inner knowing about it, that actually embarrassed her because of her fear. D. But it is only human to be afraid of what we don't understand. V. Yes, but she likes to be brave. D. Was there any particular reason she was singled out, or did she just happen to be in the right place? V. Many light ones, as that light is transmitted, are being picked up, so to say, beamed up. These souls are connecting to their brothers, to their sisters, to other beings of God, even before their consciousness is awakened. D. So it was not because she was just there. There was more of a plan to it than that? V. There always is a plan. D. I have been working with some people who have had experiences since childhood. V. And was it because they were just there? D. No, not in their case. V. No. Do you think that with anybody? D. I don't know. I'm trying to learn. But apparently it was good. It was for her benefit. V. It was for her benefit. Everything has to do with how we use it and what we do with it. D. And it was good that she also transmitted information they could probably use in their understanding. V. Oh, yes. Their understanding is beyond. There has been much information come into this one, but information is usually nudged from another knowing. D. Something has been bothering me. I seem to have only had contact or experience with positive experiences, but I have had others who have had negative experiences. Is that because there are also negative beings? V. I am not of that opinion. I am of the opinion that the reason they are clouded with negative ideas and stories, is that it, condensed or distorted time, 51, comes from that consciousness that is giving those stories. That it is so colored in all of their own creation. D. Then do you think fear and similar emotions have colored their perception? V. Of course. Fear is the only thing, and the list that comes below fear, that creates that which is dark, which is negative, which is less than love and life and God. D. Do you think they actually had experiences, but their conscious mind perceived them as negative? V. I think that it is possible, but then I am not all-knowing. D. Then there will also be asked the question, if the conscious mind can be fooled into thinking it's a negative experience, can it also be fooled into thinking it's a positive experience? V. No. It cannot be fooled into thinking it's a positive experience. You see, here is the difference. That which we perceive as positive, we perceive as good, we perceive as God. That which we perceive as negative is the illusion. The dream state. So, if we perceive it as positive, as good, as God, then our perceptions are correct. If we perceive it as negative, then it may have been negative, but only in the way it has been turned, the way it has been perceived and used. The lack of understanding. Do you understand? D. Yes. This is the way I believe. Except that some people think they have been harmed by these beings. V. There are some people that believe they have been harmed by these other beings, and by their neighbor, by their friend, and yet it is their perception. We have to understand and come to a place of knowing that all is good, and that if we perceive it out of fear, it can be nothing but negative. Fear colors and discolors. I can only tell you what my deepest soul says, and that deepest soul says, if we respond from fear, it will be negative. D. Maybe that is why I've only been involved with positive experiences. V. I think you have been well chosen. 52. The custodians. D. I have also been told of genetic experiments and genetic engineering, and that some of the results do not appear to be human. V. I believe the genetic experiments are happening on this planet, but it is happening with mankind. Man is stepping beyond his spirituality. D. That's an interesting concept. You mean there are a people on Earth who are experimenting along these lines? V. Yes, but it will not be allowed to go on. The information I have is that there are indeed beings from other planets on this Earth plane to serve humanity. They are advanced in many ways to humankind. Man is a co-creator with God, the Creator. And in his creation he can create all that his mind will allow him to. And that is created out of love or out of fear. That one that comes from another place, another planet, our brothers and sisters, comes out of love. Out of love for mankind, for this planet Earth, and for the universe itself. They come at a time of our need. They come at a time of our awakening. Val's subconscious said she never had an actual physical encounter with the craft or the beings. The only contact was this interchange of information. When Val was awakened, she remembered the first part because it was a very real reliving of the incident. But she had no memory of the last part, the conversation with her subconscious. She listened to that part of the tape, and was surprised by what she had said. This is very typical. When the subconscious gives information, the subject will not remember it. It always sounds as though another entity is speaking, and it always refers to the body it occupies in the third person, he or she, instead of I. It is always very detached, and can thus be analytical and objective.